Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. I'm Kristen. Good morning, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome, callers and listeners. Today we are discussing, I don't know what actually, I don't think we have a topic, but we've got callers in the queue. So I think we're going to take those callers first and then we'll see what happens. What else? Do want to invite, as we always do, to invite our callers and listeners to join us on Facebook and Twitter and on Blog Talk Radio so you can stay updated with our show schedule and any special announcements that we might have for you. So first, we've got a caller from, I don't know, it looks like a foreign call. Who's this, please? Hello? Caller? You're on the air, caller. They don't hear us. Let's see if we can bring on 850. Hi, are you there, caller?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I did want to say something. When I talked to y'all last week, y'all said I was going to take a journey over water. And it was so funny because we sold our sailboat and they wanted us to sail it to their new destination, which is like, you know, it was a day's trip. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Great. Yeah, I remember you, but I can't find, and I remember the call, but I don't have your birth date or name. What's your name again?
Michelle.
Michelle, yeah, okay, so I actually do have it. It's 10-14-68, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am, that's me.
Okay, hi. Hi.
Hey.
So you're validating the reading on the 5th, it was the 15th, I think you called, of September?
It may have been. I couldn't remember. I knew it was recently.
Yeah.
I'm like, well,
yeah.
What other kind of spiritual message you got for me? Because I'm just dying to be on the water. So we sold my sailboat. So now we was able to take that money and buy a refrigerator and a toilet. That's like, are we ever going to get this boat ready and take out on the water? And when do you see it happening? Or what kind of spiritual messages you got?
So you're what was the question about? Can you repeat the question that you had? Because it's hard to hear.
Oh, okay. Well, my dream is to be on the water. And
mm-hmm.
the sailboat that we sold, we needed to sell it in order to have money to be able to fix up the sailboat that I have now because, I live off a disability. And that's my dream is to be on the water. That's where my energy is. So I was wondering, when do you see me getting on the water on our sailboat where it's like everything is like got in our way of trying to fix it? Like my husband had to have surgery and it's just like everything's got in the way. It's like, are we ever going to get it fixed and get on the water?
And what was said? Because I feel like this is similar to the question you asked last time, which is fine. But what did we say last time? If that was the same question, was there an answer about that?
Well, what I asked last time was, I wanted to move on the water, and I couldn't decide whether to sell my house or stay where I'm at. But also, my dream was to take my sailboat, and go further south because of my rheumatoid. But I'm kind of being held back because my mom's got dementia and she lives with us. So we had trouble trying to find a caregiver to watch her for maybe like a month at a time to go on the sailboat.
Okay. So are you clear?
Tell me in a nutshell what.
Well, she asked, so you're asking this time when you're going to be able to, I mean, this is the same question.
Get our
when
sailboat.
No,
yeah,
when
we get our sailboat ready.
It's different because it's a sailboat. So what,
go ahead. Do you want to live on the water?
Yes, that is my, I love being on the water. Just not,
That's what we talked about last time, right, Michelle?
Okay, Michelle, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. And I know we're on the radio, so some of it's private. But so maybe you can answer it in ways that might make, you know, we can still make sense out of it. At this point, does $30,000 ring a bell on in any area of your life?
That's probably kind of close to the house that I had bought.
The house that you had bought is about that figure.
The house you had bought is about that figure?
Right. And we fixed it up. And.
Uh-huh. So, and then you, with the money from this sailboat you sold, you fixed up your sailboat and you bought a refrigerator?
No, the sailboat that we sold it for $3,000.
Oh, that's also, the $3,000 also relates to $30,000. It's just an extra zero. Okay, go ahead, Michelle. Sorry.
Yeah, what we're saying is that the $3,000 relates to the $30,000 too. It's in that figure numerical code. So I see you living on the water. Okay, you have rheumatoid arthritis?
Yes, I wanted to, like, you know how people get winter homes? I thought instead of buying a winter home, live in the sailboat further south in the winter because of the rheumatoid, but it's kind of, I'm taking care of my mother who has Alzheimer's, so we had trouble finding someone to watch her. So it's like, do you ever see me getting on the water and fixing up the boat? But we did get some money, $3,000, so we're able to buy a refrigerator and a toilet to fix it up.
Well, you bought a refrigerator. If you live on the water, what are you going to do with your refrigerator in your home?
Huh?
He asked, what are you going to do with the refrigerator in your home if you're living on the water? Do you really need a refrigerator in the home? Or are you keeping the home and then having two residences?
I was thinking about keeping the home. I couldn't. That's what I was asking last time. I couldn't debate whether to keep it or sell it. And then if I keep it, then I can just take the boat further down south and then come back here in the summertime.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
And that's the $30,000 home, the home that you're living in?
I paid $23,000 for it, and we fixed it up, and it's probably worth $80,000 now.
Okay.
So I could debate whether to sell it or keep it and just fix up the sailboat and then go down south for the winter.
No. You shouldn't sell your home and just rely on a boat as living, because what's going to happen if you sell your home and rely on a boat as living, you're going to gobble up that your investment before you know it. You won't be able to save like you think. But if you keep your home there, and you're able to obtain the home as residence, and maybe move with the boat to a warmer climate during the warmer months for yourself, that's going to be your best bet right now, than just selling the home and putting everything into the boat with some savings on the side. Because you're not going to be able to live on the boat forever.
Right.
Right?
When do you see me? Yes.
Go ahead. What do you see what?
Oh, when do you see me getting on the sailboat? We just bought a refrigerator and the toilet, but it's just a matter of getting it done because he had arm shoulder surgery and he starts his therapy this next week. And
Right.
When do you see it happening?
April. By April, if not before, but by April latest, you would be telling us, okay, this is working out pretty good. So we've got approximately 6 months to get this stuff day by day to get this stuff done. And has anybody lost a pair of glasses or broke a pair of glasses lately?
My mother that's got Alzheimer's, she had a pair of glasses that she chewed on, and I
Okay, that's right.
So that would be it.
That's just our little tidbit of validation. Okay. And have
okay.
you ever in your life had a bird feeder, fed the birds, anything with birds?
Yes, we got bird feeders out in the house, and my man loves to feed the birds.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so I'm going to put a blessing. Your man, you mean your husband?
Well, I didn't want to get married because of my disability, and didn't want
well,
to mess
the
with that. So we're like committed to each other. We wear
that's
a wedding ring.
Okay, because you mentioned him as your husband previously, but just in spirit, he's your husband.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to put a blessing over him. We got some validations today, Michelle, and everything seems to be kind of in a proper order of sequence here. So
okay.
It looks good. In other words, don't sell your home. Keep your home.
Okay.
You know, pick up your boat, take it to the warmer climate. And that seems to be the plan right now. And in terms of when, it's somewhere between now and April. It could take as long as 6 months, but that's okay. You know, if you have to go in the warmer to a warmer climate in this winter time, I still think it's going to be managed.
Okay.
Okay.
And y'all are great. I love calling y'all. I about died. I was like, he said something about a journey over water. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, that's the psychic reading. That's how it works. You know, hopefully it
y'all
works all
awesome.
The time. We want it to work all the time. It doesn't always work all the time. But when it works, that's how it goes.
Yeah, and there were a lot of validations in the reading that show that, you know, it was definitely psychic and not just, you know, general. So good luck, Michelle. We wish you luck and happy birthday coming up too.
Oh, thank you. I'll probably be calling y'all before then.
Oh yeah, give us a call again, okay?
Thank you guys so much. Y'all are wonderful.
Oh, thank you so much. Take care.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, we're gonna try to bring on our caller from overseas. I don't think there's an audio problem, so maybe they've disconnected. Are you there, caller?
Hello.
Hi,
this is Anshul.
Hi, Anshul. I thought that was you.
Also from India.
Anshul, who is he's from India.
Yeah.
But are you're in Pakistan right now, right?
Nice poem.
No, Oman.
Oman. Oh, okay. It's Anshul. And I know you're, I believe you're 30 equals 3, but remind us of your birth date.
It's 06201973.
Yeah, and just when you verbalize your birth date, you don't want to add any zeros where there aren't any. So it would be 6/20/1973 because the zero holds an energy field, and it's not an energy field that you want to put in. You've already got a zero in there. And I actually wrote down 06 for some reason because I was funny.
Yeah, when you say your birthday, don't say 06.
Oh, he's a 28/10/1.
Just say 6.
6/20?
28/10/1.
Yeah, 28/10/1. He's 6/20 though, right?
6/20.
I thought he was a 30 equals 3. Why did I 6/20/1973, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember that. But anyway, okay, what's your question? I remember him being 30 equals 3.
It's once again related to career only.
So
I want to end that. Yeah.
It's really, the sound for some reason is really, really faded. So we're just hearing kind of pieces of words. Could you speak louder and repeat your question slowly?
Yeah, it's related to guidance on career.
Guidance on
because
career.
Because the job in which I am, yeah.
Guidance on career.
Okay, and so just for a review, you had planned to go out of the country, out of India to work, correct? And your wife was going to stay in India?
Well, I am already outside for last 7 months now.
Right. So that was the plan. So you're outside. She's at home. She's a teacher, right?
Yeah.
What's her birth date again? Just out of curiosity, just so we have it.
What?
What's your wife's birthday again? Just so we have it for our notes.
It's December 20, 1973.
December 20, 1973.
Yeah.
257. Okay. So career.
Didn't need computer work or wouldn't he? What do you do for a? What do you do, Ansel?
I am an engineer by profession.
What did you say?
Engineer.
Oh yeah, engineer. Yeah, that's what that. And you're looking okay. And is he going to the States?
No,
Do you have any plans to go to the United States?
No.
You have no plans to go to the United States. Do you know anyone who lives in the United States personally?
No, I don't know.
He
you
knows
don't.
Us.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah, I do know.
He's saying yes, he knows us, but no. He meant aside from us. I was just making a joke. So, no one in the United States. He's located in the Middle East right now, correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a company, and the company, Ansel, has the letter T in it. T as in tea. As in Thomas, the letter T. There's a company with the letter T in it. Do you know offhand what that company is?
Letter T, it's in my company in which I am working as of now.
Yeah. Well, are you happy there?
Not really.
Yeah, I didn't think
do you
so.
Want to have you been there for over have you been there anywhere near or around 2 years so far?
No, it's about 7 months.
Are you able to leave that company? If you were to leave today, are you able to do it today, or do you still need to stay there until you find a job?
I am really thinking of living without finding a job in another 3 months' time. I want to move into teaching and training. So I just wanted to know if it's a good idea.
No, it's not a good idea to leave before
your
have
contract's
a,
up.
It's okay. Not a good idea to leave before. What you want to do is get a job and elsewhere and then leave. If you're not comfortable there, deal with it. You're asking for advice. So it's not good to leave.
Yes.
You know, you can leave, but I don't recommend it. Stay there until you get another job. Because, go ahead.
What this time I am looking for is like a career in teaching and not really a job.
Yeah,
so
but
it could be
no,
kind
Ansel.
Of the...
Ansel, listen. Teaching has a T in it.
Yeah.
Right? So,
So
that's okay. That's okay. Because teaching has a T in it, and actually it's better because it starts with a T.
So aside from the T that relates to your job, the T that Neil was mentioning prior to knowing anything also relates to teaching, which is the field you want to go into.
Yeah.
However, the recommendation rather than abandoning, how long is your contract with this company? Is there a contract in place? How long are you supposed to be where you are right now?
Can you please repeat?
Sure. How long is the contract that you have? How long are you supposed to be working in the location that you're working?
It's a kind of open-ended. I mean, I can stay here for 5 years, but the company is not in a good financial state.
It's not in a good financial state, but there's no specific time frame that you're going to be stationed in the location that you are. Because, how long have you been with the company?
7 months.
7 months?
It's 7 months now.
7 months. Yeah. So there needs to be, there's got to be at least a year with the company.
Well, you might be there another 4 months and then the teaching job will come in. In American dollars.
Yeah, this is what I.
What?
Go ahead.
What'd you say? You got to speak up quickly. What'd you say?
Did we lose him?
Hello? Might have lost him.
I think we lost him.
Okay.
Well, perhaps he can hear us. So if he can, you know, we'll just repeat and maybe he'll call back. But so a year, about a year, essentially.
Four
months from now, which would be like 11 months total. Then he can go back to India maybe or go look into the teaching.
Yeah, he'll get a job.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, he dropped. So he'll probably call back. All right. So.
So we were, you know, the topic.
We don't have a topic.
Yeah, we have a topic.
What is the topic?
The topic is conflict.
Oh, is that what we're talking about today?
Just came up.
That's wonderful. Wait, let's not have a conflict about it. Yeah. He's back. Okay.
Oh, he's back.
Yeah. Okay, Anshul. Hi.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's it sounds like a better connection. You're louder now. So, Neil, so a year to 11 months.
You've been there 7 months. What I'm saying, Anshul, is that by the time you've been there a year, 3 to 4 months from now, you'll return to India and have a teaching job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to ask you, in American dollars, the salary, the money, is it equivalent to a $60,000 to $70,000 a year? Where are we at in terms of that figure?
Where?
I don't know if he knows the currency conversion.
Ah.
So what is your salary?
My current salary is around 70,000 plus.
That's what I said. So I said 70.
Yeah.
Did you hear me say that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said 70, and that's what you're making. So the prediction we are making for you today is that possibly, if not before, but possibly in about 4 months, you'll be returning to India teaching. I don't know if you'll make that much money, but you'll make enough to get by and you'll be happier. The idea of your company going through a financial difficulty, if you had told us that you wanted to stay in spite of the troubles, you would have been okay. There's nothing wrong with the company dissolving. But because you want to leave, you're not happy, whatever, and you just don't feel comfortable there, that's not a problem in leaving. You just may have to wait about 3 months. Do you understand what we're saying?
Yeah.
The teaching jobs in India are not going to pay $70,000, are they?
Not anyway. That will be half of it, but maybe not that.
Yeah.
I know.
But he's home with his family.
So that's what I'm saying. You're going to have to adjust to the drop in income, and you may have to do some personal work engineering to supplement it. But if you want to be happy and be home with your family, and you know, have a little bit more trouble making ends meet but still being happy, that's going to be possible in about 3 months. You have to wait probably until the end of the year. Do you want to teach at university or do you want to teach at a private university?
Not university, but in polytechnic.
Yeah. So, okay. Okay. And you have a master's? I mean, in India, the educational system, is it equivalent to a master's?
Yeah, I am postgraduate. Yeah. Master's.
Postgraduate. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're not going to have a problem. You're not going to have a problem. The only problem you'll have is just making your financial ends meet. But you might be able to supplement that. And in the long run, when you look at the total picture, you're going to be happier. You're meant to go home.
That's the guidance I wanted.
What did you say?
That's the guidance that I wanted. Well, good. Then it fits in with your plan, Anshul.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Take care. Okay. So we're talking about conflict.
Yeah. Well, the thing about conflict, it's inevitable. Everyone is going to have conflict on some level. It's inevitable. This world is split up with diversity and duality, and every human being has a conflict within oneself. And so there's going to be conflict. Even to the extent that one reached that height of spiritual perfection if that is possible, and you think, oh, my whole life is in unity and whole and wholesome. And not really, because you're in the body and you're going to deteriorate. So ultimately, there's going to be the conflict of leaving the planet as your body deteriorates and you start to face the physicality of dying. So there's always going to be a conflict somewhere. And anyways, for the sake of argument, conflict is embedded in the human spirit, more or less the human soul, the human body. It's just that in the spirit, we transcend finally the planet upon leaving the body entirely. So we have this conflict going on. Now, what is conflict connected to? Karma. Conflict's connected to karma, and the degree of karma is contingent on what you've done in past lives. That's as simple as that. And if you don't want to believe in past lives, then okay, then just make it this life. You've come in this lifetime with karma, meaning you come in this life with conflict. We all have conflict. We have to, because that's the nature of the planet is based on diversity. Diversity. The wholeness is not, is
diversity and duality. I mean,
yeah. We're not male and female complete within ourselves. We can't have our own baby. We can't supplement what's missing in us with something within ourselves. We seek some kind of energy, whether it's the connection to nature, religion, spirituality, another person, a job, creativity, having food. As soon as you need to have water in your body, you're codependent. So there is this idea that we are in conflict because we are not typically self-sufficient. We use those terms sort of in a sloppy way. I mean, no one's really self-sufficient. If you're self-sufficient, you're going to produce your own water. You're going to produce your own food. You don't need to do anything. You're going to sit there like a plant, and you're an entire planet unto yourself. Well, it's not possible. The world is based on a sort of codependency. What's the terminology that's used is symbiotic. That's the idealism of codependency, is symbiotic, which means that there's a mutual understanding and connection between two forces, that they work together. And so then we have this union that we work together. Now, you can have a symbiotic relationship within yourself in terms of the union of body, mind, and soul. But as soon as we say body, mind, and soul, we have a conflict because it's not one total concept. So as soon as we branch in, this is the whole idea of creation, the splitting of the atom, the splitting of the molecule, blah, blah, blah. So as soon as we have that splitting, which we have to have, and we have, as soon as we have the sperm and the egg, we are conditioned by conflict. And somebody might say, oh, I don't like that word conflict. I like union better. But union implies putting together two things, and conflict only implies that they have to be put together. So conflict sometimes takes on a bad rap. Conflict isn't always bad because conflict comes to union. It's really the idea of union. Conflict is just separation.
Well, I mean, it's the same as, you know, the like duality versus diversity. Diversity has a much more positive connotation than duality, which suggests good and, you know, good, light and dark or whatever.
Right. But it also
variants,
duality,
variations in the language.
But when we talk about diversity, duality, we're talking about balance. When we talk about balance, we're talking about opposites. Opposites coming to a place where they both equalize one another's weight. So when we have that balance of energy, we actually are in cahoots with nature. Yeah, cahoots.
Cahoots. We're in cahoots with nature.
Cahoots with nature. That's an old term a bird taught me. But we are. We are.
Well, yeah, and if we talk about art, I mean, the chiaroscuro, which is, you know, light and dark, you have to have duality.
Well, unless you're
and
Andy
balance.
Warhol and you sell a painting with a white, you know, a white screen, then I guess you could say there's no duality except within the boundaries of the canvas, it's white.
Oh, well.
But no, we're not talking about that.
No.
In essence, as soon as you create something, as soon as you speak, there's duality, because the voice becomes an extension of the body because it puts out sound. and that goes into sound waves, and that becomes a pitch, and that becomes a motion of sound that now articulates into a word that we now understand, and we're having to use the usage of brain language, knowledge, the root systems of communication. All of it is all
right, and
interrelated.
Then getting into analyzing the sound, you're going to have a high vibration, low vibration. I mean, there's you know, it's endless.
It's endless. So when we talk about being psychic,
I mean, within that one sound, there's all that contrast.
There's variation, and variation, deeper and deeper and deeper you go. So the idea here is that when we look at the soul, some people want to simplify it. We heard that some people want to simplify spirit. We try to make it simple. Simplify.
There is a simplicity in spirit. There is, but there's also complexity.
True. And then we get into the concept of, you know, the simplicity of complexity, meaning that there's an essence. What that means is that it comes down to oneness. We, you know, when you have a fraction, you try to reduce it to its lowest common
denominator.
When you get into the idea of one, but see, sometimes what happens when you get into the idea of one, it becomes lonely. One is the loneliest number. Even God creating Adam in biblical lore, something wasn't right. How could Adam feel lonely if he didn't know what loneliness was?
Right.
But you see, so you're thinking, well, how can Adam understand what loneliness is, that he's alone? Because there's a concept between loneliness and aloneness. They're not the same thing. But if you're talking about somehow we as a human species, our instincts, our being inside of ourselves has a craving for connection. First, it was the connection to the water, the trees, the bushes, the plants, then the animals. And now the animals had to be named. And there was a diversity around the animal kingdom. Then finally, there was a division between man and animal, and man needed a companion, but not the same companion as himself. He needed a diverse companion. I mean, it would have been Adam and Adam, but it wasn't. It was Adam and Eve. So the idea of duality came from within the oneness. Within the oneness of man, Adam, became, in biblical lore, the oneness of female. And female is an extension of male. Female. And in Hebrew, it's two different words. But it's the idea of the element of humankind caused a splitting, which thereby became inherent in all reproduction, the splitting. So in that aspect, we're in the world of conflict, because the first conflict was I'm alone. And now we get to the idea that, well, in being alone, we're all trying to find oneness within ourselves. And then hopefully we can find oneness with somebody else's oneness. Now we have two-ness. So and then that becomes, expands and then multiply. And so the idea idealistically is that everyone is of one, because everyone is one within themselves. But as long as there's more than one person,
there's always going to be division on the planet. There's not real oneness when you're on the earth. You're not going to get to oneness until you're in spirit, period. There's even duality in the astral realm. So,
yeah.
People talk about, you know, being one, we're all one. We're really not.
Now we get into the idea of, you know, what is the division of conflict? Well, politically speaking, Democrats and Republicans.
Which?
Democracy and communism. You know, the idea if communism is a sense of control, can we also say that democracy is too, even though that everyone has individual rights? And then those individual rights are put into the power of one representative. And then that one representative has the power to become oneness within themselves. Now there's checks and balances. But the concept, the total concept of oneness is really a fallacy, because we're not really living in a world where we can say that there is true oneness in everything. There isn't, and there's never going to be. Even to the extent of I was reading an article about the veil that the Muslim women wear, and in one respect, it's oppressive. And for the feminine, it is totally male controlled, and it excludes sexuality. Another view of the veiledness of the Muslim is that it expresses the sacredness of sexuality and expresses the division of female energy and gives the female power. It was a very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that perspective as being, you know, a valid one.
It's a book called Veil. I was reading a review on
the book.
And it's an interesting concept because, you know, we think, I'm sure Kristen agrees, you know, having to wear a veil over your face and all in black. And I mean, this is oppressive. This is undemocratic. This is male domination.
Right. But it's also, you know, a sacred, keeping the feminine sacred.
Yeah. There's a sacredness to it. And there's also a power saying that as a female have a power to put boundaries around my identity. And this was written by a woman. So the idea of this diversity right here, there's a conflict right there in our language, in our communication and display of who we are as people. You know, and then when you get into the idea of democracy and really the idea that the masses, when we get into the idea of the masses, and we even get into the idea of what even happened in this last election, where a lot of white, middle-class white, blue-collar supported Trump, and somewhat more democratic, innovative, liberally speaking people supported Clinton. Trump decides to call Clinton an element from hell that's evil, and Clinton decides to call Trump an ass, an idiot, ignorant. But this idea of ignorance now comes into the effect that we as a people, the masses, Are we swayed by ignorance because we have to be led, or are we independently minded and the choices we make are not to the cause of being led into being oppressive, but we are led into the idea of being original thinkers. So right there we have a conflict. We have a conflict in even the red states and the blue states. We decide to the United States of America. Oh, really? Which sides are blue? Which sides are red? And the sovereignty of state as opposed to a federal. So we have this conflict. We can't get out of it. We can't get out. Even in the idea of religion, we have conflict. There's not one religion. There's not one.
Well, yeah, and within each religion, there's conflict. I mean, there's. I mean, look at Judaism, Orthodox, Reform, all the different levels. I mean, there are more.
Right.
People that practice Kabbalah. So within distinct religions, there's division.
So what are we saying about conflict? One, that it's inherent.
It's inherent. It exists.
It's not even instinct. It's there. It's just established. Well, you know, the more you separate from everything in the planet, the more you can maybe find unity, oneness, if that's possible as a pseudo word. You might be able to find it. But let's face it, conflict is existence. And we have to get out of this idea that conflict is always bad.
Well,
that
right,
it's not
true.
It's not a good thing.
True. I mean, you know, getting into a political discussion. However, there's so much division. Like you talk about the Democratic and Republican Party. I mean, you know, parties are created to create this kind of conflict and division. And we stay in, you know, conflict state, and things progressively devolve, and that's what's happening right now, in my opinion, in the government. There's a lot of conflict that shouldn't be, that's created
right
unnecessarily.
Right. I mean, even now the government is being challenged in ways that are somewhat. I mean, this has gone on before. There have been politicians that have challenged the system really set standards up that have been almost ridiculing the system within itself. But today and they're ridiculing everything and putting everything down. It's a conspiracy and this is fallacy and this is, I mean, the form of democracy in our country is forever changed. I think Trump has deliberately
broken the mold.
Broken energy, and we're never going to be able to look at things the way we
can. Well, yeah, because the
conventions have changed.
The conventions of behavior that we would expect from a person who is an elected official, the leader of, as we said in the last episode, the free world, behaving the manner that he does is going to forever change further leaders, because now the precedent has been broken. I mean, you know, people are going to be able to behave however they want.
And so, you know, the world's in sort of a disarray, and we don't know what's going to happen next, and we don't know what this man does and what he says and how he treats everything like a game show and a adventure show and everything. And he comes up with the some of the most ridiculous statements. And yet look, there's a strong following. People will die for him. Like he said, I can kill somebody and people will still follow me. The idea of what is essential in the power of conflict. Conflict is sometimes who has the power. And the conflict is in regards to those who are repressed as opposed to those who follow. You're always going to have that. What that man that stood before the tank in China, was it China, Russia, China, that stood before the famous photograph. Oh, it slips my mind right now. But there's conflict. Conflict in the way that hippies used to throw the flowers at the soldiers and the armed guards, the National Guard. We have conflict in the idea of what is peace. And what is disunity? What is war and what is harmony? So when we have this energy going, and right now I think we're at a terrible crisis in our world situation, not that every world situation hasn't had its crisis, but now we have this mass killing
in
Las Vegas. And we have, you know, drugs that enhance behavior, violent behavior. And we have plotting, we have guns, and we've got all this stuff, and innocent people dying, and stories, whether some of them are based in truth, some of them are based in fallacy.
Right.
The idea is that there's a conflict right there, because some are based in truth, and some are
based in fallacy.
But we have a conflict right there, because lives are being lost, and we're trying our best to individualize those lives, but then there's always those that come in with fallacies that make up lives that were lost. But the value of life is diminishing. And so we have a conflict right there. I think on our show, we're trying to promote the idea that there's still magic and elements of working with a system outside of the earth that makes life a little bit more noteworthy and supernatural and mystical. I mean, those things may save us. After all, the savior of the planet, the savior of the universe, isn't going to be of this earth. There's no one on this earth that's going to save the planet. So we have to look for those higher elements.
We're getting into this in terms of ascension, because this is a big belief held in the metaphysical community. The planet is ascending. We're actually ascending, and that it's going to be completely transformed into, I guess, a utopia. I'm not sure. But, you know, then you have a Christian view of Armageddon, which is totally in conflict with the view of the metaphysical community on this topic. So, it's a conflict.
Yeah.
And so what's really happening? I mean, is the planet descending? What do we think?
Well the planet's progressing. It's progressing towards something. Whether it's progressing towards self-destruction and new terminology about nuclear war that's being revived from old days, from the 50s and 60s, and whether one knucklehead is towing another knucklehead, you know, the rocket man, and the other one's calling him mentally unstable, and they both have their hands right over the button, as opposed to the other elements on our planet, such as, you know, the state of Israel and the survival of Israel, and that Israel's been considered a promised land, and that's vital of interest too. And the surrounding nations that want to destroy Israel, that's another conflict right there, the Middle East conflict, which is, you know, outstandingly important in our day and age, because we have to preserve, you know, Israel's considered a democracy. We have to preserve the idea that in the element, and the Christians themselves, some of the hardcore Christians are strong defenders of Israel because it's the basis of Christianity.
Right. And, of course, there's the element of Palestine, though, and the people that are getting displaced from their homeland, which is terrible.
And we can't ignore
how to balance that situation. It's very, very challenging.
Right.
Because you can see right on both sides.
Well, we can't ignore, the idea is not that you're choosing sides. The idea is that there is conflict in our planet. This is inevitable. It's not going to change. The idea
it's
is
not
how we deal
change.
With conflict without self-destruction.
It's not going to
how
change.
How do we promote? Well, the changes occur, but the
I mean, there's change, but in terms
is,
of the nature of the planet, it's a planet of karma. The planet is never going to be, this planet as it exists today is never going to be a planet of non-duality.
Not under these terms.
No.
At least. Not under these terms.
I know
unless there's a great
new heaven and new earth, all that.
All
but,
that.
You know, but that's not what we're talking about.
So, you know, this is interesting because, you know, we're kind of getting off the topic, but I think it's important that
we really have a topic.
Conflict.
Right.
Conflict.
But,
well, conflict,
you know,
it was
spontaneous today, so we're being spontaneous in our discussion. I mean, you know, it's morphing.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
And we're combusting at the same time. But the whole, well, I think we need to look deeply into the origins of conflict and come forward in time and not consider it an enemy of human nature. But consider it a part of human nature, that it's something we have to incorporate into the scheme of things. And as long as we do without destroying one another, that's the idea, that we can't seem, we, you know, we destroy, now we destroy irrationally, and it makes, and it's a great news. I mean, the massive terrorist attack, I mean, not terrorist attack, but individual attack upon one human being upon a group of many is making American history as we speak. And that's conflict, one against the many. But you talk about one against the masses. I mean, we can have one against the masses in terms of righteousness.
Right, that's
and
what
we can
I was
have one
say.
Against the masses
in terms
of destruction.
Exactly.
So it doesn't, right there, there's a conflict, there's a duality. So it, you know, the idea that we have people that come down to this planet and one person saves many, as opposed to one person who's born this planet and their intention ultimately is to destroy many. There's always going to be this duality and this conflict. And what we're trying to explain, at least in part on our show, is that what is the conflict within the person? How do we bring that conflict within ourselves first? Because everything starts at the root. Everything starts with the individual. And then we get into the massive figures and whatnot. But everything starts individually. So what our idea on this show is to help individuals. And sure, we have these lectures and stuff. But the essential part of our program is to help individuals with their individual problems. Because we still respect human beings on an individual level. No judgment. You know, anyone can call. We're here. We're an open forum. And we even our topics are put aside for the sake of our callers. So, you know, we honor the individual and we honor trying to help as best we can. But even then, anyone who calls us, the theme's going to be conflict. I mean, one of our former callers was talking about, oh, you know, you predicted, well, I'm going to be on water, and there was water, and boy, we have a unity, everything's great. And then what happens a minute later? I have a conflict. I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know where I'm going to be. Conflict's always going to be with us, no matter what, no matter where, no matter how. So as we get into the idea, we also want to what? Look at the chakra systems. How are the chakra systems within yourself in conflict? Is your home in conflict with your heart? Is your creativity in conflict with your spirituality? I mean, you have to look at those things because the unity of government within oneself, first of all, is that you govern properly your own body and you make sure you're not at war. I mean, you can't have a red and blue state within yourself and expect there not to be conflict. So the idea of unity has to come in. Listen, as soon as you wake up, you have conflict. When you're going to eat, when you're going to sleep, when you're going to go to the bathroom, when you're going to do this, when you're going to do that, when you're going to get your paycheck, we're besieged by conflict. So how do we promote the idea of well-being when as soon as we wake up, we're in Darwinism's world of survival? We have to survive. We have to make it. Even those people who live off the federal land and they have money and they can just lay in bed, sometimes they battle depression or they battle addiction, boredom, or maybe they battle freedom. Eric Fromm says escape from freedom. The individual sometimes is afraid to be free because freedom implies self-reliance. And some of us just want to be taken care of. We want to be tend to like the fox and like the fox in The Little Prince. Take care of me. So, you know, and we all want that. We all seek that. So right there's a conflict. Where's my soulmate? Where's my husband? What's going to happen? Where's my wife? Where's my lover? Where's my significant other? Chris and I was just dealing with a client that lost their soulmate. So what's a soulmate?
Well, soulmates, yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's a new term.
Exactly. But when we look at this, the terminology of a word, in it is going to be conflict.
Right.
You know, we can't say, when you get down to it, even pretending to a show, we can't say we're alive. We're in the process of dying. We're dying. We're alive and we're dying.
Yeah, as soon as you're born.
It starts. There's a quick acceleration of knowledge. The baby up to 5, 6, 7 learns more words than any, that they're grasping, their brains are thirsty, they're absorbing, they're taking things in, and hopefully for the most of us, we continue that journey. And we don't atrophy, we don't fall into being senile or having some kind of brain corruption, that we continue to learn, observe, analyze the concepts of existence until the day we die, and then hopefully that means that we transcend. So the idea, you know, when people say, I'm not in the process of dying, I'm in the process of transcending. I'm in the process of exchanging body to soul, soul to spirit. That's a journey. But then, even then, that's a progression of energy, which implies a conflict. Because you have to move forward. Progression is implied on the same terminology as conflict. So if we start looking at that word and we accept it as a progressive stage of evolving, we're going to look at it, in a different way.
Right, because many people often say, you know, I don't want conflict in my life. I just want peace, you know. But if conflict is reconceptualized as something that's part of life and that's vital to life, then it's going to be a whole different viewpoint and outlook on conflict.
Right. We're not arguing the content of peace.
And the conflict of content in your life, that it should be managed and unnecessary conflict eliminated. So that's,
right. Yeah, this is not a put down of peace or harmony. Attaining peace and harmony, I think, is sort of the ingestion of conflict. You're seeking peace and harmony because you have to dissolve conflict in some form of the matter.
In some form.
But peace and harmony doesn't come easily. Peace of harmony is provided with maintenance. It's established by a discipline. And if you don't establish that discipline, you just can't say, I want peace and harmony. So therefore I would just sit in a chair and that's it. Peace and harmony comes that all of your desires, all of your wants, all of your needs are met without unnecessary conflict. That life just goes by easily. Well, that's what we're all trying to attain. But we're suggesting that in the nature of the human character, that even peace and harmony has molecules of conflict
in it.
It does. When you really think about it, when you really stop to think about it, you can wear peace and harmony. You can even own it. Internalize it, but somewhere in the nature of that peace and harmony is going to come seeds of conflict. It just is. the more graceful human beings will apply certain terminologies to that conflict and will take conflict in such a way that they evolve it into something that's harmonious with unity. And that's the gracefulness of human beings who in the face of adversity maintain a solemn sense of harmony and balance. That's the epitome of the human character. So anyone who says they have attained peace and harmony, they have done so at the cost of experiencing disharmony. And they have learned through that journey that in order to have harmony, you have to turn disharmony into something other than disunity. It's always going to be about, it's always going to be a journey of some kind that we have to maintain and control. And that's hopefully some of the topic of what we're discussing today.
Okay, we have a few minutes left, so I think we can, is there anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's fine.
Okay, Neil, well, we are about out of time, and we are going to be back on Wednesday at, is that right? Next week is Wednesday? I know we have a change this month. Yeah.
Next week?
Is Wednesday.
It's the 11th.
Yeah, so the 11th, we're back at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Bye-bye.